Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Gravity Leadership is a community of people seeking to live our lives in the orienting center of God's love in the midst of our post-Christian world, learning to lead like Jesus, live on mission, and make disciples. In nature, gravity is the phenomenon that brings stuff together, objects as small as atoms and quarks and as large as stars and galaxies. We believe the gravity of the Christian life is the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ. The Gravity Leadership Podcast is curated conversations on what it looks like to practically orient our lives and our leadership in the love of Christ, the gravity that holds everything together.
Hey guys, welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. I'm your host today, Ben Hardman. I'm here with Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe.
Hey guys.
Hi.
We are super excited to be bringing you a series that we're doing right now on our missional axioms. And we have been walking through the past 3 weeks around the axioms that we build our missional theology around and have been talking through those. So if you are joining us for the first time, I'd love to encourage you to go back and check out the previous episodes on these axioms. Because today we're going to be talking about axiom number 4, the God who cares about it more than we do. That God cares about it more than we do. So, Ben, tell us how this kind of plays out in your life, in your ministry. Why is this axiom significant? Why is it important? Why do we coach people in this stuff? Because I think most people actually do believe that God cares.
Right.
Where's the challenge in this for us?
Yeah. Again, all of these axioms are statements where most Christians will look at them and sort of nod their head and say, well, duh. But the reason they're important is because we've noticed that we don't actually live our lives as if they were true. For me, one of the ways that I noticed that happening in my life, I remember when I was a newly married 20-something, and my wife, Deb and I, we decided to do this 5-month discipleship training school, with a missions organization, with YWAM, if anybody's familiar with that. Youth with a Mission. And, so we were youth, we were youth and we had a mission. And so we just got married. We were going to do this 5-month discipleship training school and it was inspiring. You know, we read about these famous missionaries who'd given up everything and endured this incredible suffering to kind of go to the lengths of, you know, go to the ends of the earth for God and all of that kind of thing. And we spent the last 2 months, of our time there in Venezuela, doing this short-term missionary work. And overall, it was a good experience. It helped us kind of start our marriage on a good foundation. We desperately needed something like that because we were young and we didn't know what we were doing. But I remember when I got back from Venezuela, we were getting ready to sort of re-enter back into normal life. And I realized that living this spiritual life wasn't going to be as easy as it was when I was in school, right? So there's this kind of rarefied environment of, you know, required chapel and all of these kinds of things where it felt to me like, okay, this is easy for me to be spiritual, for me to attend to God's presence and that kind of thing. And I had this like fear, really, it was of like, man, I'm going to backslide if I don't get my stuff together before I go back.
Like be a compromiser?
Be a compromiser. I'm going to capital B backslide unless I get my act together. So I remember, you know, a few days before we went back, I had created this elaborate, ambitious plan to live a victorious Christian life when we entered back into the normal world, right? And I don't remember all the details, but there was prayer, there was fasting, there was Bible study, there was Bible memorization, there was Bible meditation, which is different from study, and there was, you know, yeah.
Was there Point of Grace?
No. I was beyond Point of Grace at that point, Matt. That was definitely not cool at that point. But anyway, personal silent retreat once a month, you know, worship for a few hours and, you know, every week. I don't know. I had all these things that I figured these are going to be the things that will keep me close to God.
Make Billy Graham jealous.
Yeah. This is what I need to do to kind of stay close to God, to live a victorious Christian life, to make sure that I maintain this kind of spiritual high that I had felt over the last 5 months.
You never wanted to return to pre-Venezuela Ben.
No, I didn't. That was a nightmare. I was gonna. It was up and to the right, you know, from now on. And so, you know, I was feeling pretty good about my plan. I felt like I've got this. I'm going to be able to do this, live this life. But you guys can probably guess what happened.
It worked.
Right. Just like last week. It worked. No, it didn't work. It didn't work at all. I actually never even got around to doing my plan for one day. I remember we got back. It was a long day of travel. And, you know, I was supposed to wake up early and pray. And, you know, it was a long day. And so I thought, well, you know what, I'm just going to sleep in a little bit. I don't have to get back to work right away. And so, but I slept in. And then, you know, the second, third day, it was just, the plan was out the window. I had backslidden in my own mind. That's what I thought. But the plan was kind of out the window, and I sort of felt vaguely depressed and kind of apathetic about my spiritual life and that kind of thing. Just felt generally bummed out that I couldn't hack it. I couldn't do it. I wasn't able to live into my convictions. And I felt depressed about that because I realized, even though probably at that time I would have affirmed or assented to the fact that God cares more about my life, my discipleship, my spiritual life than I do, I was behaving as if God's only role in that was to kind of cheer me on from, like, at best, cheer me on, and at worst, sort of shake his head at me and cluck his tongue and say, well, I guess he couldn't hack it. So God was only evaluating my performance of my spiritual life. He wasn't actually caring about my spiritual life and leading me in it and present with me in it, even in the midst of my failures, which of course gets back to our axiom from last week, which was that God meets us in reality in those places of failure. I didn't know that at the time either, so I just generally kind of avoided God for a few months.
Because you disappointed
After I failed. Him. I disappointed him. I failed him.
You didn't accomplish his task list for you.
Right. I didn't do these things that were going to keep me close to him, and so my only imagination for how he would respond to that would be to kind of shake his head and be disappointed and say, well, I'll have to look elsewhere to, you know, pour out my spirit or something.
It's good. So what you're saying, Ben, is there is a way that we can operate in our own spiritual formation that allows us to take control of everything. It's almost like, in a crazy way, as Americans, we have recognized that there is a way that we can control all of life. And if we can grasp our hands around it, and if we can win in it, and we can kind of mold it and make it what we want it to be, then it's good. And we can understand that. We can comprehend that.
Yeah.
But when something goes beyond our control, when we're not the ones that are doing the work, then we have a hard time comprehending what we're supposed to
do. Yeah, I think we're afraid of what might happen if we're out of control. I think I like to be in control because, you know, I feel like I've got the best ideas.
And you're good at it.
I'm good at being in control, right?
Particularly of your own life.
Right. Particularly of my own life. And
it feels safe.
It feels safe to just be like, I'm calling the shots here. Nobody can hurt me if I'm calling the shots.
Yeah.
So it feels risky.
There's a fear in not being in control. Matt, you don't love control in any way.
Not at all. I don't love control in the way that you do. that was a good story. Setting aside the fact that we will never know if your YWAM regimen would have worked or not if Point of Grace had been a part of it.
I know. Maybe the plan was just off.
You were lacking
Point of Grace.
Yeah, you were lacking that one
good,
thing.
I had some good worship music.
Apologetics?
Yeah. No. I was trying to figure out what back in the day. It was Matt Redman back in the day.
Oh, yeah,
man.
He was good.
Yeah, he's good. Loved he's a good stuff. Worship leader.
Can I tell a Point of Grace story, guys? I think it's really important.
Can I light a candle so you can tell it?
Point of Grace came to my college, my university. My buddy bet me $20 that I would not ask one of them if they wanted to go get a cup of coffee with me.
Did you ask for?
I did, and she said no. She said no. But I got $20.
What I want you to know about that interaction, Ben, is that God cares about
God
that
cares more
about
you it than you do.
But obviously, she did not.
Yes,
no, she did not.
Was she married?
I did not. I don't know. The that wasn't a part of the bet. It was just kind of a
ask her out. Did he pay up?
Yeah. $20 in college, man.
Back in the 70s or whenever you were in college.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you went to a Christian college. You could buy four or five pew Bibles with $20.
Yeah, a lot of ramen noodles.
Nothing against Point of Grace, by the way.
No, I'm just know why that. I think it's funny because I don't know why. I don't prefer that kind of music, right. And I think it's funny to like accuse you of loving it,
right?
For
yeah,
some
yeah.
reason,
yeah. Well, it's you know, God bless Point of Grace.
Like 29% of the things I say are just to amuse myself.
Even when they reject you,
even when
that's right,
God even still loves them.
God still loves them and you.
So Ben, you asked me a question before we got lost, and I forget what it was.
Track.
Control, Matt. Control.
That's right. So I obviously don't like control because yeah. this conversation is
it's
completely
out of control.
No, I mean, yeah. So for me, this axiom, God cares about it more than I do. It's a reminder that the Christian life isn't about me increasingly taking control of things from a capital C controlling self kind of way, but that the Christian life is more about consent than control. It's more about participation rather than me getting everything under my sort of my thumb. So there is a dominion that we're to take. There's an agency. There's an empowering, like ruling and reigning with God that the Christian life is about. But it's about me controlling things less, not more, which is super hard for me. It's super hard for me. I remember when I was in college. I did 5 years of college because I spent 2 years.
You liked it so much?
I loved it in loans. No, I spent 2 years doing music theater, which was fun, but I didn't actually get any credits that would lead to any degree outside of music theater, and I wanted to eat and have a life. So I decided to major in history. I had to go 5 years of college, but my fifth year of college, I didn't need all these credits, so I ended up taking ballroom dancing.
Nice.
Because I wanted to kind of get an easy A. Well, learning ballroom dancing is actually wasn't hard for me. It could be hard for some people. It wasn't hard for me because I had already taken dance and had all that kind of stuff. But after college, I was trying to find a job, and I took a job as a ballroom dancing instructor.
Of course you did.
Of course I did.
Yep.
I told them when they hired me, I just have like one college class on ballroom dancing. I'm not that good. And this lady, I'll never forget, she looked at me and she goes, "But everybody you're going to be teaching has never taken ballroom dancing. All you have to be is better than them." And I was like, oh, I can be better than them.
Yeah. That's how a lot of churches hire pastors.
Yeah.
Yeah, it prepared me well for the pastorate, is what you're saying. So, this is a good picture in my mind of the difference between control and consent. Because in a ballroom dancing, and I don't know if you've watched Dancing with the Stars, Hardman. And
most nights.
I have not.
No,
have not.
Most evenings.
Right. You can YouTube.
But if you were on it, Tebby, I would watch.
No,
in a second.
Dancing with the bivocational small church pastors.
People would watch that stuff.
I'd watch it. I'd DVR me. It was one of the hardest things for people to do when I was teaching them was to invite them to trust me that they would get in their mind, we're going to do the waltz, and they get in their mind what the waltz must look like. And there's two parts of learning to dance. There's one is learning the actual steps, right? Learning the actual, there's different waltz moves. And then the second is, especially if you're a woman in ballroom dancing, is learning to be led by a partner. And that is actually more difficult for a lot of people learning to ballroom dance because they get in their mind what things should look like, how they should go, and then they don't pay attention to the cues you're giving. So in ballroom dancing, you know, you have a hand on somebody's hip and a hand, you're holding their hand, and you're doing gentle pulls and pushes to indicate the next step. And they're very slight. It's different than Dancing with the Stars. I mean, Dancing with the Stars, they choreograph it, and there really is no leading. They're just sort of doing what they've done over and over and over again. But legitimate ballroom dancing, you haven't planned out your steps ahead of time. And so you're improvising in the moment. The person who's leading is improvising, and they'll give you subtle cues. And so your job is as a participant then, as somebody who's taking the lead of the lead dancer, is to consent to their leadership and tend to their movements. And so you have to know the steps, right? But more than that, you have to trust that they're going to lead you in a way that won't lead you to damage, that'll be good, that the dance will be coherent. You won't fall down.
Yeah.
You're not going to injure yourself.
Yeah.
And it's a good picture for me, like about the difference between control, what my life must look like, what my church must look like.
Yeah.
I was having coffee with somebody from our church yesterday, and he asked, how do you think the table's going? And I immediately started to evaluate it based upon what I think it should look like at this stage.
Right. Here's the plan.
If God cares about it, it will look like this.
Right. If God's at work, this is what must be happening.
Yeah, and I just was, because I'm a verbal processor, don't know if you guys realize that by now, but I was able to talk myself into, his name's Scott. I said, Scott, it is what it is, and there's tons of beauty, and the problems we're having are the right kinds of problems to meet God in.
Right.
And I realized, if I have to have a certain kind of church, I will be chronically like controlling, anxious, angry, freaking out, like micromanaging.
Trying to create that certain kind of church.
Yeah, but for me, the good news that God cares about the table or church more than I do is I can receive what is.
Mm-hmm.
There's something I need to do. I need to learn some steps. I need to lead. I don't just go passive. I need to do something. But I'm tending to his subtle moves, his subtle pushes and pulls to determine where am I going to apply these steps next? Where am I going to lead out next? How are we going to move next? You know, and then I have to do that. He's not going to drag me along.
Yeah.
Like if somebody stops, you actually have to do it. So that's a helpful picture for me. Maybe just me.
No, it's a really good illustration, Matt. And I would also love some videos of those days, pictures, if you have those somewhere.
Unfortunately, there were no smartphones, so people could take
video. Or we'll just post a video of you and Ben doing the waltz.
Yeah, we'll record it right after we're done recording the podcast.
Yeah. This in the episode webpage, whatever we have.
You have to tend to my subtle pushes.
One of the things I've recognized as we coach leaders is there really is a challenge for pastors and Christian leaders in discerning then what's my role and what's God's role in ministry.
Right.
So if God cares more about it than we do, then what am I supposed to be doing? And what does that look like? How do I not carry the weight of God's role?
Yeah.
And how do I discern how God is subtly pushing and moving? So Ben, what do you think of that?
Yeah. That is like capital D discernment. That there is a sense in which it's something we have to learn how to do. I think a couple things come to mind. Dallas Willard, when he was talking about kind of how we live with God in His kingdom, he said God. Oh, here it is. You can't do it alone, but it will not be done for you. You can't do it alone, but it will not be done for you. So you need God's grace to do any of this stuff, but part of God helping us grow up into his life and participating in his kingdom is that we learn that it is not done for us. I think the two temptations are to control or to go passive, like we've been talking about, like to control things or to go passive. And so that phrase has been helpful for me. I think also, I think about... the difference between sort of just doing things for God, assuming this is what God must want me to do, and really listening for some kind of a promise or some kind of an invitation. We've actually created a matrix out of this called like hearing the promise on one axis and then sort of taking the land. It comes from an Old Testament story where Moses is saying to the people, it might be Joshua, saying to the people like, look, God has given you this land. Now go and take the land, like go and take possession of the land. And so there's two elements there that are interesting. One is God has given it to you, but then second, you have to do something. There's something for you to do. And so I think there is a sense in which, for me, I have to, anytime, here's an indicator for me. Anytime I feel angry, anxious, like I'm pushing, like I'm frustrated, anytime I feel some of those emotions, I know that I'm trying to push into something where I don't really have an invitation from God. I'm not responding to a promise that God has given me, because the fruit of that is always in my life, typically, peace. Even if it's difficult, even if it's hard, there's peace, there's joy, there's surrender, there's rest. But if I feel irritated, if I feel anxious, and I feel this like in my gut, I feel it in my belly, like this kind of this kind of thing starts churning. It feels like a big wheel. And when I feel that, I know.
I get that when I'm hungry. Is that the same?
It's probably not the same. No, it feels totally different when I'm hungry. Yep. But I get this, like, I clench my teeth, right? And I start to, like, I realize, like, I'm trying to make something happen here. And I know when I'm responding to a promise that God has given or a leading that the Lord has given me, it never feels like that. It feels peaceful, like I'm okay with whatever happens. I'm not trying to secure an outcome here. I'm just responding to what the Lord is doing, and I'm happy with whatever the outcome is because people are free, and I'm free, and God is free, and He's going to, you know what I mean? Like, I feel that confidence when I'm responding to what He's spoken to me, and I don't. When I don't feel that, that's an indicator to me. I'm operating outside the realm of God's leading and calling.
Yeah, when we look at the life of Jesus, we see a complete non-anxious presence all the time. Yeah. And truthfully, when I look at the life of most pastors, I don't see that same posture. There is within us. I don't meet a lot of pastors who say, man, I'm just not worried about anything. I'm not anxious about anything. I'm not worked up about anything. I feel really great about where we are. I feel super rested. I'm trying to find some stuff to do with my time.
Right. Kind of bored.
So Matt, what does that do to us as leaders when we carry that weight, when we carry the weight of control?
Yeah. I mean, and we're incapable of bearing the easy yoke, right? We get worn out and weary and heavy burdened, and we don't have rest. We're kicking against the goads, if you will. we're trying to make something happen apart from the enabling power and grace of God. So this is what it means. This is what it means to do things in the flesh. We're trying to do things in our natural ability apart from God. And so, you know, the phrase is that I've heard this before. The comment is, you know, it's not that we don't do much stuff. It's that we do a whole lot of stuff apart from God. Like, you know, Jesus says, apart from me, you can do nothing. Our problem is we do a whole lot of nothing, right?
Yeah, and we're doing it apart from God.
And so and so one of the things we do at this is like this dynamic we're talking about, Ben's, is one of the reasons we started Gravity Leadership, yeah?
Right.
Because we have an imagination for how to lead with competency, charisma, confidence, clarity. You see all those C's?
Yeah.
We have this
alliteration.
Thank you. We have this vision of what it looks like to lead by making things happen and having the right strategy and getting things going. But how do we discern the kingdom, tend to grace, consent to it, participate with what God's already doing in a way that doesn't just deliver on outcomes? Like, I'm just going to give you the best ballroom dance you've ever seen. No, in a way that actually develops ballroom dancers. Like, right. I'm going to train you and teach you how to dance because the product isn't what our dance looks like. The product is your actual life.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's what we care about. That's what we want to be about because we see that's what Jesus did. He didn't pick the Bill Gates, right? And the
Steve Jobs.
Yeah. Of the first century. You know, he picked the people that would consent to his leadership.
Right.
Who would be developed and then turned loose with his authority to build the church.
Yeah. And it took a while to develop them. Like the narrative of the Gospels is these guys don't get it.
Especially that Bartholomew guy. What happened?
Are they right? Just nothing said about that guy. But like But Jesus' mission was at least as much about developing his disciples as it was about anything else, right? It was that was really what he was all about. Well, good.
So here's the great thing about these axioms for me is these are incredibly good news for me. I don't know if you guys feel the good news in this, but the fact that I don't have to control, that I don't have to produce outcomes, that all the anxiety that I feel in ministry, the worry that I fear about who's going to show up this weekend, or is this event going to go off the way we had hoped it would, or do I know how to word this sermon perfectly? All of that, God cares about all of that more than I do, and he's willing to meet us in reality, and he's always present and at work, and he is like Jesus. That's really, really good news, guys.
Yes.
We hope this has been good news for you as well. We've loved journeying with you today. Good discussion today from Point of Grace to Control and Consent. Everybody have a great week.
Yeah.
We'll see ya.
Peace, y'all.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you found it helpful, please let us know by leaving a rating or review on iTunes or wherever you review podcasts. You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com to ask a question or suggest a topic for future episodes. And join our online community for free at gravityleadership.com/join. You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as an email most Fridays with curated links to articles we found interesting or helpful throughout the week. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.